Welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. There's evidence of farming from 6,000 years ago in Lincolnshire. There's a rare chance to see a Neolithic site in Orkney, and you can follow in the footsteps of Iron Age woodsmen in Wales. Save the Pendarvis coit, the call goes out, and English heritage are currently unlocking the secrets of Silbury Hill. Some Neanderthals were flame-haired, a new study shows, and ancient clay remedies are studied to provide new clues for medicine. Yet more new ideas about the migration from Asia to America comes to light. And finally, artifacts from the Neolithic are continued to be discovered in Syria. Evidence for early farming methods from more than 6,000 years ago have been found in Washingborough in Lincolnshire, England. Rare criss-cross plough marks are uncovered before the construction of a new business unit in Smile Lane. The faint lines were made by a rudimentary tool called the ard, which was an early form of plough. Flint tools buried in the soil have been bagged and tagged for proper identification later. Mark Allen of Allen Archaeological Associates was leading the investigation and said that the marks had been so well preserved because of a soil bank built over it by the Romans, which had covered and preserved the field system. These fields date from the Neolithic period and are very rare. After its Neolithic and Bronze Age inhabitants moved out, the prehistoric village on the Links of Notland lay untouched until 1978, when the Orkney site in the north of Scotland was first excavated. The archaeological remains were then reburied under sand dunes. Now visitors are being invited to Notland on the island of Westray to take a rare tour of the buildings, which have undergone an emergency excavation after being exposed by strong winds. The open days on the weekend of November the 3rd and 4th will reveal a large two-roomed subterranean building whose walls survive to head height, dating back to the Neolithic times, and also the remains of later Bronze Age buildings currently being excavated to salvage important remnants. This is an extremely rare opportunity for people to view these unique Neolithic and Bronze Age settlement remains, which are of the greatest importance to the understanding of this period of history in the Orkneys. Archaeologists will be giving free guided tours of the fascinating site during the weekend, which is much larger than the better-known prehistoric settlement at Skara Brae even. Artifacts including bone tools and steatite vessels will also be on show. The open day runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and booking is not necessary and the event is free of charge. However, you will actually have to get to the island of Westray, and the best thing to do is to contact Orkney Ferries, which runs from Kirkwall, and their telephone number is 01856 872 044. So if you're up in the Orkneys now and you want this once-in-a-lifetime chance, give them a call. Fancy weaving your way through the ancient woodlands where wolves and wildcats prowled and Iron Age woodsmen tramped their way back to the hill forts? Well, this new adventure awaits you at Castle Henlis Iron Age Hill Fort in the Pembrokeshire Coast National Park in Wales. A new footpath has been opened up between the fort and the Pengelly Forest, a national nature reserve which is now more than 400 years old. Pembrokeshire Coast National Park Authority, which owns and manages Castle Henlis, has worked with the landowner at Penpedwast, a 150-acre farm beside the forest, and has now been able to open up this new walk with lots of new interpretation, so you'll be able to walk the same routes as Iron Age hunters. Well worth a visit. Pendarvis Coit is a Bronze Age burial chamber located in West Cornwall in England. The site is in a ruinous condition and stands on private farmland. The Sustainable Trust is in negotiations with the owners to buy the 5 acres of land on which the coit is situated for community and conservation use. It's hoped that with the help of English Heritage, Cornwall Archaeological Unit and the Heritage Environment Service to rebuild the coit to its former glory. It's proposed that there will be a linking wildlife corridor between the existing woods on either side of the field. Phase one of the restoration project will encompass purchasing land, opening access to the road, planting approximately 4 acres with oak and hazel, fencing off the site, erecting an information board and publicising the project, as well as holding various events involving interested groups. Oh, that's a good way to get started. The Sustainable Trust is sourcing grants and advice, and you can contact the Sustainable Trust via the website, and that's savependarviscoit.weebly.com. I joke not. I better spell that one out for you. It's savependarviscoit, SAVEPENDARVESQUOIT.weebly, WEEBLY.com. Well, back to a very different monument, and archaeologists are unlocking the secrets of Silbury Hill, Europe's tallest man-made mound and one of Britain's greatest mysteries. Researchers have long been mystified as to why the giant prehistoric mound in Wiltshire was built, but following one of the UK's most extensive and expensive digs, they appear to have found their answer. Silbury Hill may well have been a tomb not for bodies, but for the souls of the dead. The English Heritage Dig, which cost £1 million, tunnelled 85 metres into the 40-metre-high man-made hill, discovering that its Neolithic builders had incorporated hundreds of heavy sarsen stones into its matrix. Sarsen, the sandstone still found in great quantities in Wiltshire, was also used to build Stonehenge and Avebury. Heavier than other types of stone, archaeologists have long suspected that the material was regarded as sacred by Neolithic man. Silbury Hill, researchers believe, could well have been built as a sort of spiritual tomb filled with the spirits rather than skeletons. Excavations at its summit suggest that it had a rounded rather than a flat top, and it was 5 to 7 metres higher than it was today, having almost certainly been flattened in the late Saxon or Norman period to accommodate a wooden fortress. Heavy rains in 2000 led to the collapse of a top-to-bottom excavation shaft commissioned by the Duke of Northumberland in 1776 in search of gold. Later this year, they will be removing all the steelwork from inside the mound from the 1960s tunnel, which they have been re-excavating, before infilling all the crumbling internal cavities with chalk. 1,000 tons of it lies crushed and ready to be pumped in when the time comes. The aim is to seal it up by Christmas forever so that no further damage can be done. We have to remember, of course, that Silbury Hill was built over a large period of time, and in fact has three main periods of construction. It's a very complicated monument, and I feel that we've still got a long way to go before we have all the answers. Evidence from ancient DNA indicates that at least some of the Neanderthals who roamed Europe until around 30,000 years ago had fair skin and red hair. It has long been thought that Neanderthals who spent longer than their modern human cousins adapting to cold conditions might have lost the dark skin pigment inherited from Africa. Now, scientists have found proof that some Neanderthals were indeed redheads. Researchers analysed DNA samples extracted from the bones of 2 Neanderthals from Spain and Italy. They focused on the MCIR gene, which helps skin cells to make a sunscreen pigment melanin. The gene has its origins in Africa, where the sun's ultraviolet rays pose a real risk of burning and cancer. Dr. Clive Finlayson, director of the Gibraltar Museum, commented, "The study suggests that there may be a propensity towards a reduction of melanin in populations away from the tropics. If the Neanderthal and modern variants are different, it may be a good example of parallel evolution, where a similar evolutionary response is created to a similar situation. Though once thought to have been our ancestors, Neanderthals are now considered by many to be an evolutionary dead end. They appear in the fossil record around 400,000 years ago, and at their peak, these squat, physically powerful hunters dominated a wide range spanning from Britain and Iberia in the west to Israel in the south and Siberia in the east. Our own species, Homo sapiens, evolved in Africa and displaced the Neanderthals after entering Europe around 40,000 years ago. The last known evidence for Neanderthals comes from Gibraltar and is dated to between 28 and 24,000 years ago. US scientists are investigating the efficacy of French clay that was used for thousands of years to kill several kinds of disease-causing bacteria. There's very compelling reports of clay treating infections, but that's just anecdotal evidence and not science, so says Arizona State University research professor Linda Williams. Williams said people for thousands of years have been using clay to heal wounds, soothe indigestion, and kill intestinal worms. Although the practice has declined today, the recent increase in drug-resistant bacteria has prompted scientists to look back at ancient remedies to determine their efficacy. Do the ancestors of Native Americans derive from only a small number of founders who trekked to the Americas via the Bering Land Bridge? How did their migration to the New World proceed? What, if anything, did the climate have to do with their migration, and what took them so long? Well, we have more questions about the migration from Asia to the Americas. A team of 21 researchers led by Ripon Mali, a geneticist from the Department of Anthropology at the University of Illinois, has a new set of ideas. One is a striking hypothesis that seems to map the process during the pioneering phase and well beyond, and at the same time show that there was much more genetic diversity in the founder population than was previously thought. The new DNA analysis allowed the authors to draw several conclusions. The ancestors of Native Americans who first left Siberia for greener pastures, perhaps as much as 30,000 years ago, came to a standstill on Beringia, a landmass that existed during the last glacial maximum that extended from northeastern Siberia to western Alaska and included the Bering Land Bridge. They were isolated there long enough, as much as 15,000 years, to differentiate themselves genetically from their Asian sisters. Then, after the Beringian standstill, the initial north-south migration was likely a swift pioneering process, not a gradual diffusion. What has puzzled the scientists originally was the time span between the recent archaeological dates. New evidence places Homo sapiens at the Yana rhinoceros horn site in Siberia, which is as likely a departure point for the migrants as early as 30,000 years BP. But the earliest archaeological sites at the southern end of South America is dated to only 15,000 years ago. It's proposed that the ancestors of the Native Americans peopled Beringia before the last glacial maximum, but remained locally isolated until the entering of the Americas around 15,000 years before present. So that's another theory to add to the pile. Along with the 11,000-year-old wall paintings recently discovered in northern Syria, archaeologists have uncovered a series of startling artifacts. Carved stone tools, flints, seed grinding implements, and brick grinding tools have been uncovered. Many bone objects were also found, together with the remnants of the animals that made up part of their daily diet and their intricately fashioned tools. The dig also uncovered several figurines made of gypsum, chalk, bone, and clay. The most recent discovery, an 11,000-year-old statue of a man, is particularly important and well preserved. This item will allow comparisons with other similar structures and sculptures found on sites in the Urfa region of southern Turkey. The latest discoveries date back to the start of the Neolithic period, in a period known as the Epipaleolithic. Many artifacts from this period have been discovered in northern Syria, in particular at Jerf al-Armar, a site destroyed by the Tishrin Dam, so may now be lost forever. I'd say it's a truly fascinating period, and I highly recommend people getting onto the internet right now. Type in the sites that were talked about, this Syrian site. We've also got Kermisderi in Iraq, Jerf al-Ammar in Syria as well, and you can also look at some of the sites around Urfa. We're looking at really the very, very beginning of farming in the world. So with that little digression, apologies for that, I drift off. Can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as the UK Heritage Calendar, guidance sections and library, these can all be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. There's always Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com, for more information, and of course for all your archaeological needs for tools, and learning about what sites and volunteer opportunities are out there around the entire world, there's Past Horizons. That's pasthorizons.com, www.pasthorizons.com. Thanks very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We'll hope to see you again next week.